I usually work on the web space. In fact, this afternoon I had another session about Internet Explorer 9 and all the cool things with i9. But in my spare time, I also enjoy a lot working with the phone. And for me today, it's a pleasure to talk about Windows Phone 7 series. I think this is one of the first time in Belgium where we're talking about Windows Phone 7, and we're also showing Windows Phone 7. In fact, today, I'm not the only speaker in this session. With me, I have an actual device, and I will show this device to you very shortly. So before starting, obviously, we made a big announcement about Windows Phone 7 series at MIX, and we start talking about the development platform. And now you developers can build Silverlight application, or you can build XNA applications. And we talk about how easy it is to build those applications, to publish those applications to the marketplace. Tomorrow afternoon, Charlie Kindle from the Windows Mobile team is going to walk you through the user experience of the phone. He's going to walk you through the default applications and the idea and the concepts behind the development of the Windows Phone 7 series. And he will also show you the hubs. He will talk about everything that you developer can build and how you can monetize the application that you build. Today, this session is focused on development. I'm going to talk in particular about Silverlight development. And I will cover the following four areas. I will start from the platform, so I will give you an overview of what the platform looks like in the Windows Phone 7 series. And then I will move to the controls for Windows Phone. So I will tell you what specific controls you can leverage inside your devices. And lastly, I'm going to talk also about the services, because a phone is not a phone if it's not connected to the network, connected to the web. And at the end, I will obviously take any question that you might have. So before starting talking about the platform, let me ask you one question. How many of you are Silverlight developer? Okay, almost you. So I have a good news for you. Congratulations, you are now Windows Phone 7 developers. One Silverlight that runs on the desktop, one Silverlight that can run obviously on the web, and now also on the Windows Phone 7 series. The same Silverlight, the same code, the same patterns, the same tools, because you already know very well Visual Studio and you know Expression. So the same tools will allow you to build application with Silverlight that runs on the phone devices. So if everything is the same, why didn't we do it before? Well, there is a lot of work in the Windows Phone 7 platform, the architecture. In the mobile team, I work a lot on the performance, for example, to make sure that whatever you build just works smoothly on the device as it works on the screen, on my browser. In fact, I think there are scenarios where the device is even more powerful than a normal browser. Today, in this session, I will focus on I will not give you an 101 of Silverlight. There are many resources and many sessions about Silverlight. Today I will talk about the extra, what we added to the Silverlight framework. And by the way, I'm talking about Silverlight 3, because that's the Silverlight version that you have today on the Windows Phone. And I will give you an overview of everything else that you can add to leverage the phone capabilities. Let's start with a very usual Hello World demo. And so for this demo, I'm going to open Visual Studio. You can obviously build application using Visual Studio. In this case, I will use the ultimate version. This is the release candidate. Or you can download the Visual Studio free edition, the SKU specific for phone devices, which we release at MIX, and I will give you all the links to download this content later. You can also test most of the demos that I'm showing you today by yourself later. The source code is available, and again, I'm going to give you the source code links at the end of the session, and encourage you to try on your machine. So at Visual Studio, I create a new project. And you can see now as I have a new template option here that allows me to create specifically a phone application. So I will call this Hello World, Belgium, and I will create it. Nothing new, this is very easy. And as I'm doing this with Visual Studio, you can also use Expression Blend. Now, once you create the application, what do you see? What have you got as default template? So you have a main page, which is like the starting point for including your content. You have And notice that the main page already includes for you some content. This is just like a user control and includes some grid and some title to help you with the overall layout of the application. Oh, also need to promise something. So we are not done yet, right? This is a community technology preview. I have on my phone a daily build of Windows Phone 7. So usually I would say, oh, our tools are final and everything is going to work and nothing is going to crash. This time I'm going to say the opposite. It's more likely that at some point during this session something wrong is going to happen. And I have a few backup scenarios depending on how bad that is. But please bear with me if you see something here and there. The code behind, as you can see, is just as any other CVAD project. The difference this time is that we have a phone application page, and I will talk about this very shortly. For example, let's add to the code one button. So from the tools, I'm just dragging and drop a button to my page. And then I have my button, and then when I click the button, I want, for example, to show a message box. So message box, show, ciao from Tech Days, and I'm going to give just an OK. I'm also going to put a breakpoint here, and I want to run this demo inside the emulator first. The emulator basically includes the exact same image of the operating system that I have on my device, but allow you to test locally your application. So this is how the emulator looks like. Is obviously like a stripped version of the operating system. It doesn't include yet all of the final applications. I have my demo. And by the way, just have a look to the performance of this while I do these demos. I click on my button, and obviously Visual Studio is attached to the emulator and allows you to debug, as you currently do with any other Visual Studio or .NET product. So nothing new, but the point here is that we made a huge investment to maintain the current experience that you developer built in the last years on top of the .NET framework. And now you can apply the same knowledge on top of the CVAD mobile platform. OK, this was easy. Let's move to the next sample. And in particular, I want to show you a shared library. One of the questions that I receive very often is, well, let's say that I have a CVAD application today, and I want to run the same application on my phone. What do I need to do? Will it just run? And the answer is, well, technically, the CVAD framework, the CVAD 3 framework, is the same. So yeah, it could run. It could just run. Obviously, you need to implement the new, you need to recompile with the CVAD phone version. But then if you're using libraries, this is very easy. So I have here, for example, a solution with three projects. The first one, browser host, is like a CVLite web project, the one that you can already have. The third one, Phone Host, is a specific project for Windows Phone. And then in the middle, you see my CVLite library. This is like a CVLite library, easy as that. The CVLite library contains a user control with a button. And inside my button, I want to write some code. For example, message box, again, show, hi, I'm. And then I want to communicate which operating system this library runs on. So for example, I can add system.environment.os version. And then who am I? And then button OK again. So I have one shared library here. And the next step, if I want to use this CVLite library inside as both web project and mobile project, I can just add it as a reference. So add reference project my CVLite library, and same thing for my phone application. Add reference project my CVLite library. Now I compile everything. I run the demo. I start from the desktop version. So once it's done, I start from my browser host. I test this in my browser. It'll run my application. You will see that I have a button. It is a very silly application. If I click the button, hello, I'm Microsoft Windows NT 6.1 because I'm running Windows 7. Let's see on the Windows Phone how this looks like. So this time I'm going to start from the phone host. And I'm going to start this application in my emulator. Again, look at the speed here. My button. Hello, I'm Windows CE, etc. So you can see exactly the same code, no quirks, no workarounds, exactly the same code, Silverlight 3, that runs exactly in the same way on both the browser, on both the desktop and the phone. Now, does it mean that the same application will run on both the sides? Well, if you if there are like user experience expert in the room or designer, you probably know that the way you build up an application for the phone probably is slightly different from the way you build an application for the desktop. But in terms of code, in terms of capabilities, it's exactly the same. So now that we know that we can how to start a project, and you can see how easy it is to start a project, let's start working through really the basic of this architecture. So first of all, the application is built, is made of pages. So there is the concept of pages, as you've seen earlier. And you navigate from one page to the other. And I will show you later how. Then you have a back button. So the device, and for the first time I'm going to show you the device, as you can see, has three buttons on the bottom. And the one here on the right, sorry, on the left, this is the back button. The middle button will bring me to the home page, and the right button will bring me to the search page. When I hit the back button, basically I navigate back in the stack. It means that your application basically builds several states in this stack, and you can go back either with the button or with the application. And I will show you how to do this. Also, the phone is orientation aware, so it can understand how you are or how the user is watching the application. And lastly, there are two screen sizes that are currently supported by Windows Phone 7. And those screen sizes are going to be adopted by all the Windows Phone 7 series devices that will be in the market by the end of the year. In particular, the size that I have here on this phone is 480 by 800. The other one is slightly shorter, and it will have probably the keyboard. So let's start with a demo of the orientation. And this time, I'm going to switch to the physical device. So let's go back, for example, we can close this, and let's go back to my Hello World demo. Let's run this on the device. All I need to do, here on the top, you can see that I have a drop-down, and I switch from emulator to device. You can see on the bottom here, let me zoom, that it's connecting to the device, it's deploying the application to the device. So it's connecting the XAP, it's sending my XAP over the cable to my device, and now it just run the, it just launched the application on the device. And here is my application. Now you can see how if I keep the phone in this direction, it will use the portrait mode. If I rotate my phone, it will switch to landscape mode. And this is very important because the user will use a different orientation on your screen. What I want you to show you here is look at the animation from going from one state to the other. You see? Well, see? It's kind of difficult to show the animation. Come on. Do it. Yes. It's kind of static. There isn't really any nice transition. It's fairly static. And you as developer can absolutely change the way this animation works. You are in control of what happens on the phone. Let's have a look, for example, to how to customize this orientation. So you go back to the, I'm going back to my XAML content. I'm going to close this for a second and focus on the content. I'm going to add here a property, is render transform origin. And I want to basically do an animation that rotates my screen. So from this state to this state, I want to see the actual 3D rotation. And I will show you how easy it is to build that. So I will first of all say I want to center this on my screen, so 0.5, 0.5. And then I will use a snippet of code here that I prepared that basically is just a storyboard. So I'm adding a storyboard that has an angle and will do the rotation for me. And then on the code, you can take, you can override one event. It's called orientation changed. And from this event, basically, you can set up the storyboard. And again, I have another snippet. You can override the storyboard and make it do the animation instead of like just a flat transformation. So this time I compile the code. Let's bring this to the device again. I deploy the code on the device. You can see how faster it was this time, because basically the first time ever you deploy the application, Visual Studio will need to create some virtual folder on your device. Then the following times it's much more faster to deploy and to test. And so this time, if I rotate my application, have you seen it? You can see that there is actually a nice animation. And again, few lines of code, and you have for free a 3D, kind of 3D animation. Now, I mentioned that the application on the phone is built of pages. And to show you, to explain you how those pages work, I want to compare them to the current Servlet framework. So in Servlet 2, we had an application that had one user control, and the user control had all the content. And then if you had different content to show, basically what we were suggesting was to put all the content inside the same user control, and we were asking to the user to build the logic to transfer the view from one content to the other. And then with Servlet, this is not good, because when the user hit the back button on the browser, what happens? Well, it just goes back to the previous website he was visiting. And so what we've done with Servlet 3 instead was changing this model. And so we have the application that has a user control, and the user control this time includes a frame. And the frame allows you, this abstraction layer, to navigate from one page to the other. And so this time, if the user hit the back button, it works, because basically it just navigates back in the stack of the pages in the frame. So let's have a look to Servlet on Windows Phone 7. We started from the view on Servlet 3, and then we said, do we really need the user control hosting a different frame? Well, on the phone, this didn't make very sense. And so we just brought them together. And now you have the application, so your app.xaml file, that includes inside itself a frame, and the frame will launch the page, the main page .xaml. And then if you want to navigate, you can just do it this easily. You can either do it programmatically from your application, or you can use the back button on the screen. How? Well, again, let's go back to our demo. I will use the same project. We'll just delete some content here. I want to avoid, as you can see, I have like about 15 instances of Visual Studio open in my machine, and I probably prefer to avoid opening other 20 instances. So this is like the white project as you load it when you start your template, when you create a new template. So this time I want to show you the navigation. So I will create a new page. One common mistake that I used to do a lot, I've been working with this framework for a while, and every time I do the same mistake, so I want to transfer this knowledge to you. When you start opening, adding a new page, basically Visual Studio will give you the Visual C Sharp and then Servlet user control. This is not the page that you want to add. You need to go into Servlet for Windows Phone, and these are the specific templates that you can add to your project. So in this case, I want to select, for example, a portrait page, and I will call this page 2. I will add this to my project, and then I want to use the button that I have on my previous window to navigate to the next page. Now, you say that you are a Servlet expert, and I trust you. Somebody wants to tell me, how do you navigate from one page to the other in Servlet 3? Come on. No? Anyone? So I should assume that all of your applications have only one page? Yes. Change layout. Yeah. You can use the navigation service. And these allow you to navigate inside your application. And in particular, you have like a navigate method, and you can create a new URI. And here you need to specify the name of the page where you want to go. So page2.xaml. Obviously, this is like a relative address. And here it is. So when I click the button, my application will navigate to the next page. How do I come back? So I can either use the back button on the phone, or inside my page2.xaml, I will add another button. If this is not enough clear, I'm a developer, or at least I have a developer background. I'm not a good designer, so the design of these demos kind of sucks, to be honest. And I will use I love the button because it's just easy and I love the button. You can absolutely style this button. You can go to expression. You can do any crazy fancy stuff. You can make rotation. You can make actually a cool application. I have a few cool applications, but for the sake of this presentation, I'm just going to focus on the actual code and the best practices. And so when your user clicks this button, I want to call again the navigation service, and I will just go back in my stack. I don't know where the user is coming from. So I deploy this to the device. Deploy succeed. You see on the device, it launched my application. I click on the button, and I go to the next page. I click again the button, and I'm again going back. Or I can go to the second page, and then I can click the hardware button, and this will bring me to the back page. What happens if I click again the back button? You're kind of lost, right? Well, it will go back to the previous stack. So if the user is coming from the home page, and then he runs your application, and then he hit the back button, but basically Windows Phone will just send him back to the home page. So this was a quick overview of the architecture on top of which you can build your application. Now let's focus, let's talk also about the controls that you have. And I want to start with the input. Obviously, you have all the controls that are already in the Silver framework, or at least all of those that make sense. All the controls, as you notice, when I add a button to my project, this is styled automatically using the Windows Phone 7 UI graphic and design. And you can find this in the app.xaml. So if you open the app.xaml page, and if you go scroll a bit below, you will see that here there are a lot of resources. And among all of the resources, you can also find the resources that define how the button should look like on the phone. So this is done automatically for you. If you don't like it, if you want to make something different, well, great, open this with expression, and you can absolutely change the visual state, you can change any property. When it comes to the input box is slightly different from the code. So you haven't seen my last demo. Gosh. Feel free to stop me, interrupt me, throw me something if I'm not showing the right screen. I'm switching a lot, so sometime I might lose the right screen. So here is the resources I was referring to earlier. And as you can see, they are inside the app.xaml. Okay, so the input box has something different because the input on the device is different. In particular, we have this concept of scope. Like, what is the user trying to write? Is it trying to write a text? Is it trying to write a number, a telephone number, an email address? And so depending on the type of content that the user is writing, automatically we can open, or you can open, a different software keyboard. And so those that you see here are just some of the input scopes available. You will probably find a list of 30 or 40. Also, in addition to the input to the software keyboard, we support gestures. So you can use gestures inside your application. And there are several gestures, for example, the scrolling, the double click, the pinch and move. There are several gestures that you can leverage. I'll show you now how the input in particular works. And for this, I have one demo. Let's have a look first to the XAML of this page. It's kind of straightforward. So the first thing on this page is a list box. So let me just focus on the text. So you can see that there is inside my grid a list box and a text box. The list box is what we use to display all the possible input scopes. The text box is what we are going to use to test each input scope. In the code, this is what happens. So in my main page, I'm data binding to the list box all the input scopes available. And in order to do this, I'm just doing some reflection over the framework that is hidden inside these enum helpers. When the user select a different scope, basically I'm changing the input scope of my text box. So you can see that the text box has an input scope property. You can set it up as you prefer, depending on the type, and then you can see how it makes the difference. So let's run this on the device. Again, connecting to the device. I'm deploying this to the device. You can see here, I have my text box. Let me zoom a bit. I have a text box, and then below I have all my possible input scopes on this device. And for example, let me show you a few ones that I think are particularly interesting. Well, let's start from the text. If I use the text and then I click inside the text box, I'm going to have nothing new, right? The standard software keyboard. If I click, for example, on the number, let's see if I can find telephone number, for instance, and then I click again on the text, this time I'm going to have a different software keyboard. The actually that I really like is the chat. So there is this chat input scope, and then when I click on the text box, what's the difference here? You see that small icon with the face? So if I click this icon, I have emoticons. And so you can add easily the emoticons to your chat context. Now, if you look more closely, all the emoticons now, I think, okay, this is too much for it. But all the emoticons look the same. This is a current bug that we have in this build. I promise that you will be able to use more than one emoticon in the final build. And by the way, this is not even like a good emoticon. It could have been better. Okay. But when we talk about input, it's not just about the text. It's about gestures. And so, for example, as I said, if you have a list box or any kind of scrollable content, automatically, you don't need to build anything. Automatically, every control will have gesture support. So if you have a list of items, you can scroll fastly, you can scroll slowly. They will already have all the gestures capabilities embedded. And you also have an accelerometer on the device. And you can use this accelerometer inside your application. And there are several interesting scenarios where the accelerometer comes handy. Now, the first time I start building a demo, a prototype with the accelerometer, I came into the dilemma, what am I currently seeing in these values? So if you take your hand, and this is what they teach me at school, and you put like your fingers in this way, basically these are the directions of the phone. So you can see the X, Y, Z axis. They are exactly like this. And so you will get positive values when the phone is facing the top, and negative values when the phone is flipped. How can you interact with the accelerometer? In the past, I've done a lot of applications using the Compat framework and using also other frameworks on other devices. One of the challenges was that every time I use a different device, I need to change, A, the way I was interacting with the API. And sometimes maybe there wasn't even an API. It only came recently, if you think about it. And sometimes I had to write like my PMVOC code or C++ code or some even like more weird code. And then the values that I was getting back, they were very different, because some phone was taken into consideration the time, some phone wasn't. With Windows Phone 7 series, you have a standard API. And so you can reuse the same API, and this will allow you to work on any device that ships with Windows Phone 7. Okay, you didn't miss anything this time. So I'm again on my Hello World project. And if you want to use the accelerometer, you need to add a reference. So references, add reference, and you can see here a list of references. Now, notice that all the Silverlight references are at the bottom, Silverlight dot something. This is what you already seen today with the Silverlight framework. All the Windows Phone references start with the Microsoft namespace. So everything that you see here under Microsoft, these are the specific Windows Phone 7 APIs that you can use. And the accelerometer particularly is under sensor, so I will add the sensor reference. And then if I want to use my accelerometer, basically I just can create accelerometer sensor, and I will call this X, and obviously need to add the using statement. And then how do you start this app? Well, accelerometer equal accelerometer sensor dot default. This is like a singleton pattern, so you get the default accelerometer on the machine. Then the next thing you want to do is attach to the event that gives you back the value, ready, change it. And then the other thing that you want to do is starting the accelerometer, so accelerometer.start. Now, to make this application a bit funny, And again, because I'm not a good designer, I want to still build something on top of my button. The button that I added in the first demo is still there, and it will still be there until the end of the session, I think. So let's go back to my page. I have my button, and I will replace the grid with a canvas. And then what I want to do in this case is moving the button according to how I move the accelerometer. So inside my ReadIt changeit, I basically need to change the position of the button inside the canvas. And I can do this using a few lines of code. Notice that, let me just rename the button to button. I'm also very creative with the names, as you can see. So X name, button. I let you notice one thing here. And this is actually a bug that will be fixed before we ship this on the device, obviously, and before we give you the next release. When I retrieve the value from the event, I should be able to update the graphical thread automatically. In this case, instead, I'm using the dispatcher.beginInvoke, because basically this code happens in the foreground thread. And so this dispatcher basically allows me to go from one thread to the other. But normally in the next release, you will not need to use the dispatcher. And then notice like how I get the value of this accelerometer. Did you notice anything? It's not value. It's e.value.value.x. Why? Again, this has been one of the... it's been a very funny to follow in the engineering team. And basically, there have been two different teams that have been building two different parts of the framework, and then when they put it together, they realized that there was two values. Again, things like this will be fixed in the next release, so you will just have e.value.x. Okay, let's run this on the device. Switch to the device. Obviously, right now the device is the only one to have a support for the accelerometer. However, our team that is working on the emulator that you've seen previously is working to allow you to use an accelerometer in Windows or an accelerometer that can be connected to Windows and let you simulate the accelerometer also when you are on your desktop. In fact, yesterday I saw a very interesting demo from Rob that was showing how to use the Xbox pad to move the accelerometer in the device. Okay, so here I have my phone. I start the accelerometer pressing the button, and then you can see how the button basically will follow the orientation of my accelerometer. Pretty cool, huh? Don't you think this is the super cool and we should publish this application to the market as soon as possible? No? How many of you would buy it? Would buy this application? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. I was hoping to become rich with this. Right, I'll try again. How many of you wants to buy this phone? Aha, everyone. Okay, so this is, I'll tell you a bit, sorry, a shorter story. When I went into the speaker room this morning, the first question I received was, can I touch it? I was like, what? They told me, what do you mean? Can I touch it with my hands? I said, no. And then I realized that they were referring to the device. This is the first device that told me to enter in this country. So let's open an auction. $800. $900? Anyone? No, those devices will be available soon. And by the way, this is the same device that we use at Mix. This is a prototype. This is not final device. Ooh, I realized you didn't see the back of the device. So I want to show it, all of it, to you. Isn't that cool? And if you want to watch it later, just come to me after the session, I will show you more in detail the device. All right, let's go back to our presentation. We talked about the accelerometer. Can we build something more cool with the accelerometer? Well, absolutely, absolutely. And we have a guy in the expression team that built a very interesting project. Let me deploy this to the device. This is a game. So Peter Blois previously built like an engine, a physics engine, that allows you to simulate like physics rules, physics behaviors using Silverlight. And then when we start working on the phone, I thought, well, why don't I do the porting of this engine to the phone? And this is made of many classes. In fact, let me show you quickly. Like, if I look at the project, you can see that there are behaviors, and there are like all the normal stuff that you need to create when you create a physics engine. And this is quite complex, to be honest. We need some time to go through the code and look at all the collision and all the gravity stuff and everything that matters. However, it's just been able to recompile those projects, add the libraries. Those are libraries. So it just included the libraries to his Windows Phone project. And here it is with a game. It's not like me. Like, I build a demo with one button. If I'm in a good shape, I can use two buttons. He created multiple levels. So the first level, obviously, is easy. And you might be familiar with this game, right? So you have a ball, and you can use the accelerometer to win and pass the game. And I can win this, yes. But then you also have more advanced game. For example, one that is very nice is the pinball. You remember the pinball, right? Windows 98? I don't remember. And so you have the ball, and then you have these pinballs, and you need to play down with the pinballs. And you can see, what I want you to look at here is the performance. So this is Sievrite. This is an engine, a physics engine, built in Sievrite for the desktop initially, and it just runs fine, even better on the device. And the fact that you can use the accelerometer obviously is an added value for your device. So we talk about the gestures, we talk about the text input, we talk about the accelerometer. Another input type is the audio. You have access to the microphone of the device. And you have access to the current buffer, the stream of audio that is coming to the device. There is a short latency. This is for technical reason, but it's just like close to 10 milliseconds. And you can eventually increase this latency depending on the scenario that you want to build. And what you can do is like you just can attach to the buffer ready events, and you can just interact with the buffer of audio. How do we do this? From Sievrite, you are allowed to call some of the XNA APIs. And in particular, this is part of the XNA framework. And so you can just like include, as I did before, a reference to the XNA API, and you can start using it straight away. I'll show you a demo. And this is absolutely my favorite demo for the Windows Phone. We showed this demo during the keynote at Mix, so you might have seen it before. But it's actually pretty cool to see this again in action. So I work on this demo with a team of very smart people in San Francisco. And so in the meantime, I'm just deploying the demo to the phone. This is a Sievrite project. It uses another physics engine that they build on their own. It's connecting to the XNA API, so they are doing like some work with the sound. It's connecting to the accelerometer. So basically, this is like taking all of the future that we've seen earlier all together. And so here's the demo. Increase the audio so we can hear it. Start screen, dark. And the first step is to choose a character, right? Which one should I choose? Which one should I pick? Scott, Steve? Steve, let's choose my boss. Hi, Steve. Here you are. And you can get Steve Ballmer face. Okay, Steve, if you're watching this demo, please don't fire me. Thanks. All right, now you will understand why. Then the second step is to put some cloth, to customize the cloth to Steve. So we can change the trousers, and we can change the T-shirt. And then you know that Steve has always his red pullover, so I should find here a red pullover for him. Here it is. And this is Steve in action. But this wasn't good enough. It was too serious. That's not, but it was still not serious enough. So what you can do is, if I click here, now there is a gravity on this device. And if I move the device, you can see how my character will start moving. And as he hit the ouch. Screen,
ouch. Ouch.
I think you can hear him now, right?
Ouch.
And if I scroll, if I shake this even more,
ouch.
More quickly,
ouch.
So do you follow the performance? Look, just have a look to the kind of
ouch.
Cool demo
ouch.
That is.
Ouch. Ouch.
And then
ouch.
Something else that you could... Okay, thanks, Steve. Sorry. The next thing here that you can do is make it talk. So you can hear him saying, phone developers, right? And you can also pitch his voice. And so you can change the pitch. And so on. And so I'm using the XNA API to change in real time a data a stream of music. Okay, thanks, Tim. We understood. Bye. And so this is just like the work of 1 week, maybe even less, to build this very cool, I think this is very cool demo. At least it's much more serious than my button that follows the accelerometer. Don't you think? How many of you would buy this demo? Or, well, download it. Okay, now everyone wants. So we use this demo a lot internally. In fact, Scott Guthrie, the first time he saw this demo when we were doing like the rehearsal of the keynote, basically started saying, can you actually add the face of Bob? Can you add the face of Ray? Because I wanted to show it to him. And it was having so much fun to demo this demo in the week before the mix. We might see one of your faces in this demo in the short future. Will you be worried? I think it would be funny. I hope not to be there, by the way. Right, we talk about the audio. But in general, you can interact with any media element inside your project. So on Sivrite, you know that you have the media element object that allows you to include any audio, any video, any multimedia content. What about the device? Well, we work a lot to make the same media element that you already know available on the device as well. So no changes required, either to the code, to the XAML, but also to the codec. And so I will show you later the codec that we support, but we have hardware acceleration, so the media element can be hardware accelerated. We support like the media stream source, so you can do like fancy scenario, or you can encode the code in real time. We support the DRM. So, for example, companies such as Netflix, they already announced that they will stream videos to the Silverlight, the Windows Phone 7 series devices using DRM. This is like the protection that they can get for streaming videos. And you can also play with like loops, and with the XNA API, you can basically create like a DJ application type. The only restriction that we have compared to the browser version are you can only have one media element per page. So you need to optimize for one media element. And also, you cannot have a video brush. Everything else is available. So you can also have like transformation, animation, change the opacity. You can do 3D animations with a video. Everything is available for you. Let me show you quickly how to create like a demo with the media. OK, this time I'm going to create a new project. Or I should already have, here it is. Oops. So file, new project, Windows Phone application. Because I want to show you how to integrate a video inside the application, obviously the first thing I need to do is add in my video. So let me hide the other images, and I'm just going to drag and drop a video to my project. And then from the toolbox, I'm going to select the media element. And as I go to the surface of my phone, I'm going to design my media element here. And then because I said that I need to have at least one button for each demo, I'm going to add a button here. And the button basically is going to play my content. So when I hit the button, I want to start my media file. So my media element 1.play. There are a few other things that you need to set up before running the media element. In particular, you need, first of all, to specify the source of the video, right? So you have to do this, you have the property source, and this will be movie.windowsmediavideo. Notice that Visual Studio will tell you, hey, there is an error. So there isn't an error. This is another of the few bugs that we're going to fix in the coming release. It's basically, there is a problem with the binding to the resources of the project right now. But when you compile it and you execute, it will just work. And then I also want to set the autoplay property to false, because I want to start it manually. And lastly, you need to set up the cache mode to bitmap cache. Now, if you're not familiar with the cache mode, basically the bitmap cache property allows you to send this content to the hardware. So the hardware will accelerate this specific control. You can apply this property to any user control inside your project. The media element, again, in the final release, will have this property automatically set by default to cache, to bitmap cache. But right now, you need to still do this manually. So I'm going to deploy this to my Windows emulator. So we should see shortly my video elements appearing here. And as I click play, here it is, my video, with obviously audio support. What do you think about the complexity of adding a video to a mobile application? And I let you think to other platforms. I want you to think to what we had previously. And again, this is like two lines of code, same video, same code, and you have a video inside your application. Same codec also, and the codec is very important, meaning that if you have video scenarios today, you can run exactly the same scenario on the device. And even more, actually. In fact, in the device, we support the same codecs that are supported by Silver 3, plus all the codecs that are supported by the Windows CE system. And so you have support for H.264, and you have like baseline, main, and high profile. You have support for VC1, and in particular the simple, the main, and advanced profile. And also you have support for DVX, like version 4, 5, and 6, and all like the other mobile video standards. In the audio, we support the Wave, obviously. We support the MP3, and also like stream of SSV or MP4. For the images, we currently support JPG, JPEG, PNG, and GIF. So there is another article in the MSDN that goes even more in detail and in depth into the encoding settings that you can use to optimize a video or a media in general for the device. Another control that is available on the device is the web browser control. And easy as that. The web browser control basically allows you to embed a web browser inside your application. When I say embed, if you think about like other platforms, often is a problem to embed controls. The only way you have in order to open some web content, to open some media content, is to launch an external application. What we want to do with you instead, with the Phone 7, is allow you to have everything in the same place. And you can really create excellent experience. So you don't like the media player in the Windows Phone 7 series. Obviously, this is not the case. But you can have, for short videos, maybe you can just include a video inside your application. The web browser control, in particular, allows you to go to the network, so go to any external website, and also allows you to load local content. So you can, for example, embed an HTML page inside your project. You can interact with the page, and I have a demo that will show you this. And you can obviously support by default all the gestures, the panning, etc., as well as the transformation. What's really important to understand on the web browser control is the viewport. The viewport is a very important property. Basically, when you have a full site and you show this site on the mobile, the Windows Phone in general, like any device, will just show a viewport, a part of it, and it will change this viewport depending on the gesture on the screen. So let me show you the browser control in action. And this is the sample. And I will start showing you the HTML page. This page is very easy, and it contains a couple of JavaScript functions. You have a call from Silverlight, and you have a call from script. So the first function is what is called by the Silverlight framework. The second function, instead, allows you to do the opposite. From the web page, you can call your Silverlight application. How? With this windows.external.notify. And if I go in the background of the page, you can see how I'm attaching to the event script notify. And you can see later I'm invoking instead the previous function. Now, let's run this on the device. Switch to the device. It's deploying the application. Run my application, and I have my text box and my browser. And then as I double click, basically zoom in on my inside my web page. And if I type something here and I call Silverlight, basically we send the content to the Silverlight. In fact, you can see that the text box content has changed. And vice versa, if I change the content inside my text box, and I hit go, it will propagate this update to the page. So you have like full communication between your web page and your Silhouette application. Can you do more than this? Absolutely. For example, how many of you don't need at least like a 3D browser? So, for example, this one, this demo, will show you how to create a 3D browser. So let me go, for example, to my favorite search provider, Bing. It loads my page, and then obviously you need this feature because the Windows Phone 7 doesn't have this feature. Spin. And automatically it will create a 3D cube that has my page as one of the faces, and it will do these 3D transformations. How? I'm just using Silhouette. You know that in Silhouette 3, you have like 2D transformation, and you also have 3D transformations. And so you can play with, obviously, fancy scenarios. The only problem with this demo, I assure you, is that there is no way to stop this other than kill it. But I'm sure that you can work on this. Again, I will donate all the source code because I know that you love these demos. Windows Phone 7 series also includes the apps. And tomorrow, Charlie is going to show you more in detail what each app is. Very shortly, an app is, for example, the picture app, or the people apps, or the games app. When you build an application, your application is not living in its own context, but can be integrated with the apps. So for example, in this case, I'm visualizing a picture from the picture app. And when the user click on the screen, you can see like all the action now. The user click on the screen, what happens is that a pop-up appears from the bottom. There is a menu. And if the user click create, the create will open another menu. And this is a menu of applications. You can have your application here, meaning that you can extend the hubs using your applications. And you can have your application be fully integrated with the hub experience. For example, you can take the picture and you can do fancy stuff with that picture. From your application, you can also call operating system features, for example, the camera. So let me show you here a demo of how to make a request to the camera, take a picture, and then elaborate the picture locally. So I go to my Hello World project. Or actually, I can also use like the last one, probably. So I remove the media element, and this time I want an image instead. So I'm in the designer view, and I just drag and drop an image. And then instead of playing, I want to take a picture. And when the user takes the picture, I basically want to call my camera task. This is a task. And because this is a task, I need to add another reference, specifically to microsoft.phone.tasks. So I add my reference. And now I'm able to start using one of the new tasks available. In this case, this is camera capture, if I remember correctly, task. Let's see, yeah. Camera, create my new camera. And then all I need to do to show this is just call show. So my application will call the camera task. How do I come back from the camera task after the user took the picture? You can override another event. It's called onChooseReturn. And this is basically called from the operating system when the user say, for example, yes, I like this picture, it will go back to your application. And here in this choose return, I will use some other code. Basically, this is just pure math. And it's taking the arguments, is casting the arguments to like a picture, to a photo type. In particular, this is photo result. And then it does some math calculation to change the pixel and change the order and do an average of the pixel colors below. And it just changed the colors. So let's see this in action. It's probably easier to understand. I'm deploying this application. Go to the device. Today, obviously, you're not able to try the camera on the emulator. In general, the emulator team is trying to extend the support in the emulator for any device or accelerometers, GPS, location, etc., etc. We want to provide you like a virtual environment to test your applications. For example, something that is already enabled, and this is very cool, you know that on the device you have multi-touch support, so you can have multiple fingers using the application at the same time. If you run the emulator on a touchscreen device, can be, for example, one of the devices that we gave away at PDC, you will be basically able to use multi-touch also on the emulator. And we're trying to work on something similar for everything else. Now, I'm here on my application. I take the picture, and this will load my picture application. Now, please smile. Jeez, voila. Okay, this picture is dark. So I took the picture, I say accept, and then the picture comes back to the application that does the recoloring for you and then shows here the picture. Oh, here it is. So you can see like very easy steps to be integrated with the operating system. What can you do other than taking pictures? Well, actually there are many tasks available. And we divided them into categories. The first one is launchers. The second one is choosers. What's the difference? Well, the launcher is something that you launch from your application and you don't expect the user to come back. The chooser instead is something that you launch from your application and you expect to come back to your application. And so you can interact with the media player, with the search engine, with the camera, with the contacts, with the phone, the calls, with the SMS. You have like an integration point with most of the part in the operating system. Okay, so we talk about the platform. We talk about controls. What about the services? You know that a device doesn't exist on my desktop. The device is with you. You're working on the street and you need some application at that point. And so one of the most important services is probably the location. The location service allows you to add localization to the application. The smart thing, and this is different from what we used to do in the past. In the past, you probably had to use the GPS, you need to use another library to connect to the cell tower, another library to do Wi-Fi triangulation. This time around, instead, the model is different. We have an abstracted layer that you can start using in your application, and this is already available in the API that are shipped today. And this layer basically will use the GPS, or will use the cell towers, or it will use the Wi-Fi, depending on what the user is asking. For if the user needs a very particular granular information, he will probably go to the GPS. But in order to save battery, he might try to look in the Wi-Fi and see if he can, if he already knows the position of the Wi-Fi. Or he could use just like the cell tower. Also, if the device, the battery is running down, so for example, if it's like below 10%, maybe it doesn't make sense to use the GPS. And maybe in that case, it will roll back to other easier scenarios. Now, I don't have a demo for the location, and the main reason is that we don't have enough data on Belgium yet. Obviously, this is the first device to enter in this country. But I have a demo about another interesting service, the push notifications. A lot of users talk about background, running application in the background. What does really mean running an application in the background? If you think about it, running an application in the background is kind of like a service. And when I think about service, I think about a server. So what you can do as developers is create a background application that runs on your server and is able to communicate very, very smoothly and very easily with this application. So if there is something happening in your context, you can propagate that event to my phone. There are several ways you can propagate updates. The first one is called tile. And the tile, if I go to my home page here on the device, each of these rectangles, they are called tile. And you can see, for example, the Xbox One or the others that are changing dynamically the content. And so from your application, you can set up a specific tile, you can choose a specific template, and then you can update this data. For example, if this is an array of pictures, you can say, okay, so if there is an update, I want to push this update, and the phone will show an animation on the tile. The second type of animation that you can create is called toast. And the toast is a message that appears on top of the screen, regardless where you are. You might be browsing the web, you might be outside of your application. The user can still see a toast that connects him back to your application. And this is how the toast will look like. The third one is just like a generic event. So the user launches your application, and then when you from the server have some updates, you propagate the updates to the push notification APIs, and automatically those will reflect this back to your application. And the application will receive the updates and will show the new content. This is very dynamic, and this infrastructure is built for you. So you don't need to think about how do I synchronize, how do I manage the security. There is a huge infrastructure behind living somewhere in the cloud that you can leverage. And so in this slide, I will try to show you how this infrastructure works. Everything that is on the top happens inside the device. Everything that is on the bottom happens on the server, on the backside. So the first thing you need to do, obviously, is creating your application. Then the next step is to call from your application the push client. And this is something that lives inside the phone. When you basically ask to the push client, hey, I want to open a new channel. The push client will give you back a URI. And this is a URI, a public URI. This is something like HTTP, notificationservices.something else. The next step is for your application to communicate this URL to your backend server. By the way, this URL is unique for each device, and this is basically the key that allows you to send back the message to a specific device. Now, we are on the server side. When, let's say that something happened, like 1 day, 2 days elapsed, and then you want to propagate some update to your client, to your customers, what you can do is calling not the device, but this time you're going to call our notification servers, our push services, and this is just like an HTTP post request. And you send us the message, the content that you want to propagate to the client. And that what we will do on your behalf is sending this, propagating this message to all the push client on all the devices, and then the user will see either like a notification, a toast, or a tile. So there are several, there is a presentation that has been done at MIX that goes even more in depth into this system. What we didn't show at MIX is a demo of this system. And now I wanted to do something particular for you today, so I will try, I promise, I will try to show you for the first time the push notification in action. I say try because obviously this is difficult. And the failure rate for this demo is 99%. I'd be very transparent up front. So please bear with me if it doesn't work at the end. So first thing I want to show you my application. This is the phone application that will basically set up the client, as I showed you in the previous slide. And as you can see, you have APIs that create this new notification channel. So it's just HTTP channel, new HTTP notification channel. And I want to put a breakpoint here. If the channel is already open, in this case, we'll draw an exception. So I have another breakpoint here on the reconnect channel. Okay, let's deploy this to the device. I switch on the device. Oh, by the way, if you're using the Wi-Fi or network in this moment, please stop it because I need all the network available here. Please don't make interaction with this. No, I'm joking. It will be stable. Obviously, this is like still a prototype environment. You can see here in my demo that I'm creating the channel, and then I'm also creating the binding to the different notifications type that I saw earlier. So if I push connect, and I switch back to my debugger, this is tricky, but let's try to do it. And I go through. So let's see what happened in this case. I take my HTTP channel, I add a watch element, and you can see that the channel URI could not evaluate. So if I keep going, I expect to see an exception here. No exceptions. But let's have a look again to my HTTP channel. Oh, perfect. This time I have the URI. You can see here, this is the notify.liveint, et cetera. This is the address that I was referring to in my previous slide. This is the unique address for this device that allows you to reach back this device later. So I copy this address, and I just continue running this application. I also want to create the binding for the toast. So we click binding. Okay, and we binded the toast. Now, if I go back to the desktop, I need another application, and this is happening like on your server. It could be a service, could be a web service, or it could be a Windows application, anything. In this case, I created like a very small client, desktop push tool. Here it is. And so I'm pasting the same URI that I copied earlier. So channel URI, HTTP notify. And I want to send here a message, to propagate a message to my device. And so I'm going to say, hello, please. Oh, this is awesome. And you can see that I choose different message types. Or if this is not big enough, you can choose different types and I have, hello, this is awesome. Now, here it comes the complex part. If I hit push, what is going to happen is that my message will go to the cloud, to this notify live service. This service will try to identify where my device is, and it will send a notification to my push client in the device. The push client is going to send the toast and is going to visualize the toast to the user. And now, ready? Click push, switch on the device. Yes, and this is the toast. You can see that it does have a different and funny color. We are going to work on this. And basically, when you click on the toast, you can go back to your application. There are several other options. You can customize the picture. You can customize the text. But this is like the workflow. In terms of performance, obviously, I'm using like high priority messages right now, and there will be there is a full document on the MSDN that explain you the kind of priorities and the timing, and there are a lot of resources that goes in detail into this process. All right, so this has been the first live notification message delivered in Belgium ever. I should go in the history for this. And this was my last demo. So to close, we've seen today many of the CVET features for developers with the Windows Phone 7 platform. I'll show you the code because I want this to be very actionable. Tomorrow, Charlie will show you like the platform, will do the demo of the phone. You can get all of the demos in the links that I'm showing right here. You can get the videos from the session that we recorded at Mix. Please watch those videos because they explain you in detail like the platform, the user experience, the tools, the performance. And there are a lot of best practices to take. To conclude, I'd like to say thank you for your time, and I'd like to take any question for you. Thank you. Yes. So the question is, will the push service be free or will it be charged? So we will talk more in detail about this about anything regarding costing tomorrow with the marketplace conversation that Charlie is going to explain. And in the future, you will see a blog post that goes into detail about this topic. I'm not saying that it's going to be charged. I'm not saying it's going to be free. I'm saying somebody else will give you this answer. Yes. What is the security behind the push? And I invite you to read the MSDN because then you can see basically the security model. To be very brief, when we talk about push, we are not inventing a new standard. It's just an HTTP request, either from the client or from the phone. So when you send a message, you do an HTTP POST request to that specific URL, that is like anonymous, so you don't know exactly the user information. And then the message can be secure, can be sent through HTTPS. So I would say any security that is on the web applies here as well. The only point where you probably will need to work on the security is when you transfer the notification URL from the device to your spec service. In this case, you notice as I added a breakpoint on Visual Studio and I did the copy and paste. In a real-world scenario, your device will need to send somehow that message to your service. And you're accountable for that, so you can implement any security model that you want. Yes. Is it possible to invoke the URL? It's to revoke, yes. So the question is, let's say that there are spammers that send a lot of messages to the device. So the reason we have this asynchronous model where our servers in the cloud are like a proxy to send back the message is exactly this. That anytime if we identify that there are spamming scenarios, we can either like inform you or we can have like automatic detection of these cases and block those eventually. And also, we can. It's obvious that we can scale to as many devices. So I hope that you will have, and I'm sure that you'll have like 100,000, millions, billions of users, and we will just send the message to anybody just for you. Any other question? Yes.
What about augmented reality? Is it possible?
So the question is, what about augmented reality? This is something that is not available in the version 1 for end developers, but this is definitely a scenario that we are looking into, and you should expect to see some real cool demo happening soon. Yes, please. So the question is it possible to react on an incoming call or the completion of the call? There is a talk that has been recorded at MIX that basically explains you the events and how your application will interact with the events on the phone. Basically, if you receive a call and the user is using your application, the phone will switch to the call and will freeze for a second your application. So it will put it like in a freeze mode. When the user ends the call, basically your application is brought back to the foreground. And you will have an event that informs you that your application is going to freeze. In that moment, for example, you can eventually, I don't know, persist your state on the local storage because each application has its own local storage. You can save information, and then when the application comes back, you can restore those informations. Yes? So the question is it possible for the user to block an application from using the GPS because me, user, I don't want the application to know where I am? Absolutely. Absolutely. We care about privacy and we care about security. As a matter of fact, the first time you run the device, and you go to the search, basically the search engine is connected to the location service as well. And the first time you run the search, the Bing page, let me show you this. Now you're not going to see the message, but I will show you what I'm talking about. The first time you hit the search button, this brings you to the Bing page, right, where you can start searching on your device. So the first time you do this, you will see a pop-up message in the upper part that says, hey, the Bing application would like to use the GPS. Do you, user, want to allow this? And you can say yes, no. And if you change your mind, then later you can go into the applications, settings. It's like another menu inside the setting of the phone, and you can basically say, no, actually, I initially said that Bing could access my location, and now I don't want it to do anymore, and so you can change it from there. So you are in full, the user is in control of his privacy, and everything is secure, absolutely. Yes, please. Yes, so the question is, there is a style that I keep using in my projects. And by the way, if you open the app.xaml, this is where all the styling of the application is. So this is where we define all the default colors and like the default shape of the button, etc. And then the question is, can I modify it? And are we going to explain and talk about this? And so there is a mixed session about design on Windows Phone Experience. I don't remember the exact title, but if you search for design in Windows Phone, they basically show you why we choose this style. They will show you that actually there is another one. So by default, we have two possible styles. One is black, or sorry, one is dark, like the one that I used so far. And the other one is light. It's more like on the white. So the user can choose between those two styles. You can create your own one. And then we also have available guidelines that tells you why we recommend this one and how you can create new styles or how you can create additional styles, additional controls in your application that still match this stuff. And if you go to the MSDN, those guidelines are already available. In fact, in the link that I show you in the slide, there is a blog post of the mobile team. This includes a post that goes in specifically about the design, talks specifically about the design. Any other question? Yes, please. Nope. Is there a question? No, there isn't. All right. Yes. Oh, questions? No question. No question. All right. Thank you very much for your time, then. I'm here if you want to see the device or you have following questions. Thanks again.